good evening, everybody, whatever you're from, depending on your time zone, pick the one you like. So thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. My name is Robin Ayoub with the Localization Fireside Chat, and welcome to episode 190. Today we are recording a great episode. Today, 190 episode. I can't believe I'm saying that on the Localization Fireside Chat. Not even 2 years old now, 2.5 years old. I am thrilled to be joined by Adam Bittelmeier, and Adam is the CEO of co-founder of Modelfront. Modelfront, a company that is pioneering AI-driven quality prediction for translation workflow. Adam brings fascinating perspective. I know I've talked to Adam before, and I'm so impressed with our first conversation. I thought, why don't we make an episode and podcast over this? Our conversation, he's not just another entrepreneur jumping on the AI bandwagon. At least that's my first impression of our conversation. He previously worked as a software engineer for Google Translate, founded Machine Translate Foundation to democratize access to MT and MT resources in general. He speaks 8 languages. That's so impressive, Adam, himself. And he is also understand translations from multiple angles, the engineering side, the research side, and the actual language learner and user side. So welcome to the conversation, Adam.
Thank you, Robin. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being with me.
Shukran kteer, I can say.
Shukran, oh wow.
Yeah,
you can throw a few words in Arabic. So I love that.
Sure, sure. Yeah. Thanks so much. It's not counted in one of the 8, but yeah.
And you know, we have something in common. I think the listeners, you know, probably would be appreciate that. I know the first conversation mentioned to me that my wife is Armenian and your wife is Armenian. Am I correct by
that's
the same?
True. That's yeah. True. That's true. Yeah.
So there you go. We may meet in Armenia at some point by luck, I think. Thanks so much for joining me again. As we say on this channel, Adam, for the audience, everybody's got a story. So why don't we start with this? What is your story? What got you here?
Well, I guess I grew up, you know, sort of in a little bit of chaos, and I always had a love for languages. But I also had a love for technology. And so I studied in Seattle, studied computer science, and it was very clear, right? We're talking like 2007 is when I graduated. You remember those days? I wanted to go work at Google Translate. That was just the thing. And so I got into Google and I did that, right? If you think about sort of what AI or NLP was back then, that was very much the thing to do. It was actually a very small team back then. I was one of 3 engineers. There was maybe a dozen researchers or so. Yeah. Before that, and that's kind of how I picked up some Arabic, I had been working on the transliteration API at Google. So if you know, turning Arabizi, what they call Tarib, so turning Arabizi into proper Arabic, right? So this is also very much in that range, in that domain, Android as well. Yeah, and so, you know, we're working, at that point you had about 1 billion internet users, right? So it was sort of the first 1 billion internet users were mainly the 1 billion people who can speak English, and everything we've been doing since then has been adding the other, what now, 7 billion who don't understand English. I was privileged to be one of the few folks sort of maintaining the Google Chrome, Google Translate integration at that time, right? Which with the launch of Android sort of became the way that a ton of people on our planet access information. You know, most of the websites are not in their language, right? Yeah. And so that was sort of the background. And very quickly, I sort of came to the conclusion that machine translation is great when it works, but it doesn't always work. And so what you really want is to be able to sort of, as a user, to know, okay, right now, like it was fine for all of this stuff, but on this one, it like totally hallucinated. Yeah. So, you know, basically automatically catch when Google Translate is wrong, if you want to put it like that. So that was sort of the state of things, my career before I founded Modelfront. That was kind of what I'd done up to that.
So how long you worked for Google then? Was that a long stint? Or?
6 years.
6 years? And yeah. What was the deliverables for you, like from where you started to where you finished? Did you build a Google Translate or did you contribute to building it?
I always felt like I was one of the later folks, because if you remember, that wave started right when I was maybe still in high school, right, essentially. So I got to work with the tail end of the people who sort of created machine translation, online machine translation as we know it, right? So who created Google Translate? Franz Josef Hoch, Jakob Uskreit, who then went on to co-author the Transformer paper, Attention is All You Need. Right? But I was the youngest one one there. Yeah, it was, we were spread very thin, right? If you just three engineers. So yeah, I would say one of the contributions was stuff around like the did you mean feature. So if you type right in Arabizi or Russian in the Latin alphabet, like just make it work, right? A lot of that kind of real world stuff, that was sort of my quality focus. I did a lot of stuff like, okay, we're launching a new version. Can you break this?
Yep.
Which is totally outside of my job description as an engineer, but you know, sort of made it my business. And I was the one on the team who knew the most languages, right? So what we were doing a lot of new language launches back then, and you're launching, let's say, Kazakh, and nobody knows Kazakh there, but hey, if you know a little bit of Turkish and you know Cyrillic, you can maybe break the thing and or at least understand what's going wrong here, if somebody reports it, et cetera, et cetera. So those are the kind of things that I was doing. Yeah.
It's interesting though, you bring a very valid point to the conversation when you said 1 billion people speaks English, but there are 7 other billion people don't speak English. And most of the tools are, I don't know if most, but it is an accurate word, but I would say it is, because at least the most visible tools are created in English. And then we try to transform them to adapt to other languages. How do you, what's your comments on that? And where are we now in that progress?
So I would say it's tools, but also content, right? So if I just say, I mean, the stuff that I've been reading lately, for example, and I read in the kind of eclectic mix of English, German, and then maybe Russian, and it kind of trails off after that. But right, you just take, maybe some article that's doing the rounds in the SF startup world right now. Those are totally not accessible to people who don't understand English. So from that sense, it's not really that different than like 1999. And the really interesting articles, right? If you take some of the stuff around startups, around AI that's going out right now, AI actually does a pretty bad job at translating those still, because it's just like such niche and novel content, right? And I think the best proof of this would be, you would never tell a kid, certainly I don't tell my kids, that, hey, you don't have to learn English because AI is going to solve it. Like, nobody tells their kids that. So we all kind of, and even in 20 years when you're, big, right? That's not really gonna, even though we see this amazing progress. So from that perspective, it has gotten a lot better in the sense of, and that was one of the things I worked on and I was privileged to be a small part of, right? Early on, we have made a lot of progress in sort of making crappy translation really accessible to a lot of people. And it really helped a lot of people on Earth. And I make no apologies for that, by the way, to all the people who are sort of bitter about it, right? Who've kind of like lost sight of the goal of translation is removing language barriers, right?
That's
right. So, that we've made a ton of progress on. Like, at least it's kind of like you can get the topic, you can get the key things, et cetera, et cetera. But in terms of like high value translation of high value content,
probably it wasn't meant for that, right?
Yeah. I mean, we would never say like rely on this for medical advice or something like that, right? But in terms of that, I mean, we haven't made a lot of progress in the sense that also the amount of content is exploding.
Of course.
Much faster than the throughput and productivity of the professional human translation industry is exploding. So in that sense, it's worse than ever. There's way more content that's untranslated, and people around the world don't have that much more access to.
There's
to
not the much kind capacity of, out there, right? I mean, universities are not graduating that number of people that you require to do the translation by professional translators. So
right.
The delta needs to come from somewhere.
Right. And the reason for that, which is essentially what pushed me to found ModelFront, was the following, that post-editing, the translators were right. Post-editing is actually not that much faster than human translation from scratch, it turns out. Because if you have to check every single word,
you may as well do the entire translation yourself.
Yeah, if you're a pro, right? I mean, okay, it's maybe 20% faster or whatever, but it's not like this 10x order of magnitude that's going to like impact things at planetary scale.
Do you think we've moved the bottleneck to the post-editing steps?
That's essentially where the bottleneck is, right? And so that was where we decided to found ModelFront. We said, okay, like we talked to these large translation buyers. They said, look, if you could say, we see that a ton of the translations that we send to the agencies are coming back unedited because they were actually perfectly fine. We just don't know which translations they are. So if you could, and identify those and auto-confirm those, that would help us do a lot more translation.
So is this one of the reasons that pushed you out? Is this one of the business reasons that you saw, okay, there's an opportunity here, I've got to go out and build a solution on it? And that's you, how you came out and designed and put together Modelfront?
I would say, if I'm very honest, no, I really deeply felt that we just have to say when Google Translate is wrong, or when, you know, we have to be able to catch this stuff. It's insane. It's 2020. That was these transformer based models that already come out, right? The civilian world didn't hear about ChatGPT yet because they didn't care until 3.5, right? Like all this was already happening. I was like, all right, Google's not going to do this. Somebody's got to do it. Looks like it has to be me, right? But I didn't know what a TMS or an LSP was at that time. And we kind of found each other, and we found these translation teams, and then we got things rolling. But if I'm very honest,
that's true, because you came at it from a tech perspective. You did not know the language industry at all, right?
Right. So if I'm very honest, that's how it was. But then what made the business get off the ground was, we said, okay, what's the most valuable application of this? And we talked to, you know, everybody. We talked to LSPs. We talked to, you know, people, researchers who are doing, you know, researchers inside Facebook or Meta or whatever, or Google, right? These are the easiest people for me to talk to, because that's, you know, my peers, about like filtering training data or evaluating models or all the possible things. But really the highest value thing you can do is to help large translation buyers translate a lot more content at human quality.
And the post-editing is the bottleneck. And you're right, it's confusing to a lot of people when it comes to post-editing. And I think, you know, you and I have talked about this before, is that entire trust era that we're in, trust period that we're going in right now as a humanity, trusting the new technology, meaning that if you are a unilingual person and you are translating something and you look at an output, you need to look at it with a certainty that this output is correct, is accurate. And you need some sort of a signal or some sort of a flag or some sort of a tool that allows you to do that. Otherwise, you're hoping it's correct. We don't know. I mean, take an example of somebody that doesn't speak Korean, and then you are going to looking at a data or a piece of content that it is in Korean. There's no way for anybody to judge that unless you speak Korean, unless you're familiar with their language.
Right. And even if you do, right, at the volumes we're talking about, it's just not physically possible to necessarily review every single word, right? So, yeah, I think that's sort of one of the defining things, though, of translation is that, right, if I'm a large translation buyer, I have a piece of content, I want to put it into, you know, 50 languages. There's just nobody, there's no translation, single translation person, director, whatever, who speaks 50 languages. So, yeah, part of the problem is fundamentally that I have to send things to this agency and they come back and I don't really know.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about Modelfront. Talk to us a little bit about the company itself. How is business? How are you seeing things right now from Modelfront perspective?
So I would say, yeah, firstly, you know, business is good. When I look around, both in Silicon Valley and then also in the translation industry, I'm very thankful for how business is going. I would say everything in general, I'm always impatient. So I think things have been too slow. Like if you think about what we do, right? Okay, you know, all sounds very good. You make, you know, decide which machine translations, you know, can skip humans, right? It's kind of the thing that everybody wants. There's just one problem with that. Half the translation industry is not even post-editing yet, right? You're never going to hear that at Lokeworld, because that's not a very cool thing to go say on stage. But like, that's the reality. And I'm talking Silicon Valley companies too. They're just starting post-editing, right? Big names. Progress is just so slow because everybody's been dragging their heels. Nobody knows what
resistance
the hell they're doing.
Resistance to change, is it, Adam? What do you think?
I haven't been on the operational side. I'm sure people have their reasons. We're all, you know, I'm super resistant to change in some other areas of my life, right? I don't know that my kids get on TikTok. So, you know.
So you're not on TikTok, is that what you say?
Right. But, you know, we're all conservative in some area. We're all late adopters in some area. But the reality is, I publicly admit that just now.
Yeah.
But what you have in the translation industry is everyone pretending we're here, we're you know, exploring agentic, blah, blah, blah. It's like, dude.
Stop exploring?
Exploring is good. Exploring is good, but also reality. Start implementing, and the reality is, yeah, like, you know, workflows are a mess. You know, 6 human steps. No machine translation post editing yet for most of the content. Just you know, vendor has you, you know, and you can't even change anything, right? So that's the kind of stuff that's going on in people's day to day.
I don't know why would people do that. But to be honest with you, put on a news that it is not reality or they're not true. I think everybody's looking for the, you know, the hurrah kind of a message out there. I don't know what it is, but that's an old way of saying we're doing well, but we're not doing well. In your opinion, when I talked to you last time, Adam, you mentioned that your market sector or the market segment that you work with is the enterprises, your customer directly.
Yeah.
And you don't work with, I don't know if that changed since last time we spoke, that much with LSPs or the language industry in general. Is that still the case?
That's very much the case. So it's just a much simpler proposition to, you know, large buyers say, hey, we can automate, you know, provided you are doing post-editing, right? Human quality workflows with machine translation post-editing at scale, you know, we can help you automate whatever. 50 million words this year or whatever, right? It's a very clear value proposition. You automate this much and you keep the same human quality, right? Easier said than done, but very simple if you can prove that it's working. If LSPs, they're always living day to day, worried about cannibalizing the business, et cetera, right? That's just a whole sort of psychological can of worms. They don't necessarily have the incentives. It's like if you tell lawyers, hey, we can help reduce your billable hours, right? They don't want to reduce their billable hours.
That's right.
So that's just...
Lawyers are famous for that.
Right. It's just another can of worms that's sort of out of the scope of what we do and not our mission.
Now, can you, for the audience who are not familiar with ModelFront, just can you explain to us high level how the technology work without getting into the weeds of it? In general, like I know many customers probably will have different content management systems. They work with many LSPs. They have their internal departments. Content is flowing through not one channel. I'm imagining content is flowing in most of your customers through hundreds of channels. If you don't mind, explain, where does it fit in the ecosystem, I guess?
Right. So firstly, they're going to keep all of that, right? That's important. Secondly, they have a TMS. So that's those hundreds of channels, yes, do all flow through a TMS. And I think it is important. That is like a prerequisite, right? You can't sort of like want automation, et cetera, if your house is not in order. So you gotta have to have all the content flowing through the TMS, have your machine translation engine or engines connected, et cetera, right? And so you keep all of that. A ModelFront basically auto-confirms a bunch of MT segments inside the TMS. So after the TM, so first they get their TM matches, right? It comes in from the CMS, they get their TM matches, the machine translation runs. Now, after that machine translation step, and before the human post-editing step, ModelFront is basically like this agent working inside of the TMS and saying, okay, we're going to auto-confirm this one, this one, this one. Nope, this one we can't. That's still, we're going to not touch that. So it's still going to go to human. Auto-confirm, auto-confirm, leave, auto-confirm, auto-confirm, like that. And that's before that maybe the project even goes out for quoting, right? So right there in the project, you know, billing, you can already see, hey, now it's, let's say, 50% done, there's another 50% still remaining, and that's going to then go out to the agency or linguists.
So I guess from my perspective, that's called, I think, quality prediction, right? Is that what you call it internally?
Correct. Yes, internally and externally, we wouldn't consider quality estimation alone to be enough. So a score to be enough because, you know...
Because a lot of people are using a scoring mechanism, right? I'm assuming.
A lot of people are trying to use a scoring mechanism. I haven't seen one. I haven't seen a success story.
You have a success? Yeah, okay.
I've heard only language that's not, you know, fit to use on this episode with regard to the experiences with those. All right. So the thing is, this, you know, it might spit out 72, even assuming that 72 kind of makes sense, which often doesn't in some of these cases, you got to decide is 72, you know, below the threshold or above the threshold, right? And you have thousands of combinations of content type and language, right? So quality prediction is, hey, at the end of the day, approve or reject.
Now, one of the thing or items that the industry struggles with is that entire conversation around when it comes to quality, is it good enough? Or should I always be reaching out to the ultimate content quality that a human or a machine combined can produce? Is there a line in your application, in your software, in ModelFront, where that is being considered? Good enough versus top quality, and who controls that? Who's in control? The translator, the project manager, the programmer?
So we don't generally provide control there. Rather, we have to deliver to their bar. And that bar is being set essentially by the human translation, by the whatever bar they're editing to, the human translation is being edited to, and we have to match that.
So that quality indicator is controlled by the human translator or whoever is on the inside.
I'm saying effectively, right, the quality is whatever it is in the workflow before Model Front's in the picture. That's okay. What decides where the quality bar is, right?
Oh, I see.
So you can't say, hey, today
it's not a currently with you can move in and out kind of thing.
Right. For all intents and purposes, that's not what they want. So firstly, it's not possible to say, hey, today our quality bar is here, and this is, you know, the training data and the TMs and everything that we have, and I want AI to go here. Like, based on what data, how would it match that? It doesn't even know, right, what that means here. So, but what we can do is match that, right? Now, we could also lower it, but nobody wants that. They want to match it.
Now, it's very interesting that you've talked to me a little bit about Machine Translate Foundation that you created alongside with Model Front, which is interesting pairing because, you know, for profit organizations, such as anybody, I guess, anybody is in business. Some people are not, you know, most people are in business not to be philanthropists. They need like to get some profit, or that's why you're in business for. But to start a foundation alongside that, what drove you to it? What motivated you to it?
When we first started Model Front and we started talking to all these large buyers, so much of the time, there were folks who weren't quite ready. They were still just starting to use machine translation to do post editing with, or they were already started, but they often had a ton of questions like, you know, which machine translation engine is the best? We have Canadian French, not, you know, French, European French, right? Which engine should we use? Which one is right for our scenario? And really the answer is it depends. So it really depends on, do you have data to customize with or not? How much bandwidth do you have? Which locale? Do you care more? You know, do you have, what kind of content do you have, et cetera, right? If it's DeepL, Google, Microsoft, whatever. And this is not Model Front's business. We're not, you know, I think this information should be free and open. It's good for the world. And it's less work for me if this is just out on a website. And maybe somebody else has a better answer than I do. Mm-hmm. So let's have this information out there, right? And so it's not necessarily a charity. It's also just, you know, right and less work for me because this is not Model Front's business. We want people to have great machine translation, but there's really no reason in this day and age that should be kind of gatekeeped. Kept by, you know, consultants, or that you should have to ask an ex-Google Translate engineer to get the right answer on that. That should just be on the web. So, and now the LLMs have totally learned all the content. And so, you know, even if you ask ChatGPT or Claude about these questions, they give the right answers. And so our motto was like, simple questions, simple answers. Like when we started the Machine Translate Foundation and machinetranslate.org, you just couldn't get an answer to simple things like which machine translation APIs are out there.
True. Now, the quality estimation, like I've been around the industry for a while, and there's a lot of people been dabbling with this thing for many years. Quality estimation and the search topic there's been research for at least since 2013.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And there was many workshops around statistical machine translation. I guess that's what started it all.
You know too much.
A little bit. So what changed that allowed you to turn the research concept into something that actually works in production environment? And why did it take so long, do you think, in general, to get there?
So firstly, definitely deep learning, and then these transformer-based models, which happened to come out of my old team at Google, right? The T in GPT, right? Sort of started in those circles. So if you go back to 2013, 2014, the models were using a much older approach. The first work of Dr. Lucia Spezia was using what's called feature engineering, so sort of an older type of machine learning that wasn't super scalable. So that's the one thing. The next thing I would say is that the market grew a lot, right? So if you sort of extrapolate back, how many people, the overall translation market was smaller, and then the number of people doing post editing was much smaller 10, 15 years ago, right? So there just wasn't as much demand for AI to check and fix AI because people weren't using AI in most of these organizations. And then the third thing I would say is very specific to Model Front. It's just, this thing is actually really, really hard, right? Technology got better, market got bigger, but this whole thing is really, really hard to pull off. You know, with all respect to my old colleagues at Google, they launched something, you know, after we launched, right? They kind of launched something similar and tried and failed. Yeah, that's most of the large translation buyers have tried, most of the large LSPs have tried, all the TMSs have tried, and they've all failed, right? I mean, in the sense that I don't see any success stories out there. So this thing is very, very hard. And so there was just a lot of things, you know, frankly, if I had known how hard it was going to be and how long it would take to sort of get things off the ground, and I probably wouldn't have started it, right? So in essence, there are a lot of things that come together. And the way I like to put it is there's no silver bullet, right? So I compare it more to something like Waymo, right? There's not like a trick, right? It's just hard engineering, operations, machine learning, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Now, I think you've introduced an automatic post-editing alongside quality prediction, right? Can you walk us through how these two technologies are working together and what does a typical workflow would look like in an automatic post-editing? And if you don't mind, maybe for the audience who are listening to this, oh yeah, that's interesting. So how much percentage-wise a human are still involved in the process? I'm assuming they're still involved somewhat, but how much?
Right. Definitely they are. Humans will always be involved, and we can talk about that too. So if you look at it, right, when we initially started, we were only, you know, basically providing AI to check AI, right, and then triggering human intervention. And based on the fact that, hey, these segments would not be edited anyway. But then the buyer said, well, look, of the stuff that is still getting edited, you're saying it's going to get edited, correctly predicting that it's going to humans. And they're making these very mechanical edits again and again. For example, changing this apostrophe to this apostrophe. You know, the French love to do that, right? But that's a perfect candidate for automation if your model knows that it's, you know, if your system knows that this is going to get edited, can't you just do that edit for us and then recheck the segment? And if it's good to go, approve that one too. And so, you know, for a long time we said, well, you guys retrain your MT engine and then, you know, there'll be more to approve. But the realities of enterprise translation teams is that never happens. And so we had to provide those models. I can get into why I think it's actually very hard to do that. But so ultimately we ended up having to provide that. And now that's just default available as part of the system, and they don't even have to think about it.
And what do you think the percentage in terms of human involvement right now? 80-20 almost, or where are we at?
It very much varies by content type. So there are cases where it's 80-20, meaning 80% automated and
What I
20%
meant,
still
yeah.
goes to humans. But that is not the majority. There are cases where it's quite the other way around.
20-80.
Yeah. 20-80, right? So 80% goes to humans and 20% is automated. And that can be for a ton of factors, right? So sort of how novel it is, or even things like segmentation and so on, obviously language pair. So it's a real range.
So before I move into the AI impact on the human, and we'll talk about that in a second, but I have a general question to ask you, like because you work on the enterprise side, I think the most obvious question that comes to mind in from a business perspective, what are you seeing out there, Adam, in terms of these language services that are embedded inside of those large organizations? There was a wave of outsourcing all these people. Are they back inside now? Is there like a reverse wave? What are you, or are you seeing more automation that is probably don't need to be staffed anymore, to be honest with you, with a bit of an automation?
Yeah, so I sort of see that I haven't been in that industry enough, right, in the translation industry enough to sort of have seen all the cycles. But to me, it feels a little bit like these sort of server side versus client side waves that you have in computing, right, where that kind of goes one direction, then comes back the other direction.
Central, decentral.
Right. But overall, there's a lot to be said for keeping control in-house, but like outsourcing sort of auto-scalable things to agencies. Right. So we're pretty agnostic there, I should say, except that we do strongly believe that you get the best outcomes when key things are controlled in-house. Right. So, but it really depends on the scale of the organization too, and what makes sense. So I don't want to prescribe anything for anybody, but certainly the buyers we work with keep the key things in-house and have been very, the reason they were in a position, right? They're essentially ahead of the pack. The reason they were in a position to talk to us and implement this is because they had kept control of their workflows, even sort of with the previous generation of technology, or were able to get back control of their
Yeah, because I've
workflows,
seen
of their
it.
data, of their tools.
Yeah, I've seen the flow from being centralized internally. You got a bank with, I don't know, 150 translators internally, to deciding, you know, in the early 2000s to outsource all this to an LSP who they thought by then, you know, saving cost on headcounts internally will help them financially. And then that happened. And then the question of efficiency came out because, you know, the world works in 5-year contract cycle. So they contracted with the LSPs for 5 years. At the end of the 5 years, said, okay, we gave it to you. You worked with us. Thank you very much. Now we're going to look for efficiencies. So the LSP starts to squeeze the ways they produce things, and they could not achieve the balance, in my opinion, my personal humble opinion. They could not achieve the balance between squeezing cost down versus keep the quality steady. And then where you end up with customers unhappy, and then they started getting more control internally to control the LSPs. And then they found out single LSP is no good. We can't put all the eggs in one basket. We have to diversify our LSP or demographic, if you will. And then they end up with from one LSP to 20. And then that mushroom group of LSPs, it grew, it mushroomed out. And then you end up now, you need management tools, you need software to handle this. And you probably need to hire a little bit more staff internally. I think back to your earlier comment, the cycle is reversed, right. is being reversed internally, I think. But in a different way now, probably people are not hiring as many translators internally as they did before, but now they're more control internal.
Right, right. I mean, if you think about it, the actually finding the right translator at the end of the supply chain is a very hard thing. And that's kind of where the LSP adds value, right? Because, you know, who knows, let's say biotech, patent law, and Vietnamese, and is not working as a patent lawyer, let's say, right? They're working as a translator, right? And they're available right now. Right? This is extremely niche stuff. It's actually very hard to find these people, and they're not commoditized, right? So that's, you know, to me, kind of the value of the LSP. And then if, you know, as a buyer, you don't necessarily have like a full-time need for somebody with this amazing set of skills, right? And there are many multiple companies that do have that need. So it kind of makes sense to aggregate that for that person. So that's sort of the argument for not having the linguists in-house necessarily, right? There are exceptions, gaming companies, et cetera, but like there's a lot of reason not to do that. And so sort of, you know, the question, but if you let like the management of the overall operation get outsourced, well, they're never going to add efficiencies because they don't want efficiencies, right? Et cetera, et cetera. So like from my perspective, just looking at the technology side, very clear thing is like, obviously never let the agency be the one who sort of controls your TMs, right? Like this is just, you know, sort of old fashioned street smarts, right?
Well, there are some agencies that won't give you the TMs.
Right. This kind of stuff, right? You should also be the one who chooses which MT engine you use and that, and whether you use MT or not, right? That should be on your side as a buyer, right? These are just, don't get the TMS from the agency, and especially not the TMS developed by the agency, right? Because they're never going to add the features that add efficiency, et cetera, et cetera. So those are kind of some basic rules of thumb, right? I think just sort of basic things that are not controversial, that there's no like sort of trade-off there. Like you definitely should keep those things on your side as a buyer of any serious scale.
And you know, like just again, another general view probably from your side, Adam, if you don't mind just commenting on this. You know, we work in an industry that is more of a transformation industry, right? We take a content from one language, we transform it into another language. But with the advancement of technology nowadays, I mean, that must be on its way out, I would say. I mean, why would people translate if they can create content in the target language right away?
I'll take the other side here.
Okay.
You know, to some degree, it's always been happening, right? And if you can do that, you definitely should, right? And so, you know, one example you see, I don't know, some articles about the stock market, right? They're kind of generated based on the price action, or you have e-com scenarios where it's generated based on the characteristics of the item. But I think a lot of the high value stuff, you know, people complain they're downstream. And it's like, yeah, that's why you get paid the big bucks. So life's just like that. I have this patent that I need translated now. I don't have something, you know, the luxury to generate things. This is what's sitting on my desk right now that I need to go to 20 languages. You know, we're the DOD or the DOW, I guess now, and we've intercepted, you know, a million SMS of, you know, terrorist chatter or whatever, right? And we need this translated right now. I can't like generate the terrorist chatter in a bunch of languages, right? So.
Now, there are some industries and contents that I guess there would always be translation. But, you know, in general, if you're talking about marketing, if you're talking about like the other side of, or the enterprise side, Do you think this will take hold or take a foot inside of the inside of?
I think people should always try, but I think that essentially that it already has been happening to some degree, and the industry as we see it is already sort of the industry after you do everything you can do with machine translation, after you do everything you can do with content generation, and really what we're left with right now, right, which is, to be clear, this growing, you know, $75 billion industry is the stuff that really, it's so slow and painful right now that the only reason anybody would ever put anything through human translation is because they have to, because it's that important to deal with this painful process and painful industry.
Yeah. Now, one of the, you know, you mentioned that before, that one of your essentials, I guess, in your technology in Model Front is you work at a segment level, which is mirrors how translation memories and CAT tools already work. Was that intentional, Adam, and you know, building this kind of a model? Where do you see it? How do you see it revolutionizing everything?
Very intentional. So we get asked all the time, hey, can you do it at the word level? Hey, can you do the document level, right? Et cetera, et cetera. But really the economic unit is the...
Segment.
Is the segment, right? And if you think about it, I think there's a clear cognitive basis for that, right? That was already established with the translation memory since the 80s. But, you know, if I give you a sentence and I tell you which word is in the sentence is wrong, let's say, or not, we're not sure about, you still have to load the whole sentence in your brain to check one word. You where can't just like check that word in isolation, right? So there's no point going further than that, right? And at that point, you're also biasing the people in terms of where they look, where they edit, et cetera. So you're contaminating your feedback data. Right. So there's not much. If they have to look at it, they have to look at it. Right. Doesn't matter how much highlighting you do or whatever. And then document level, it's the opposite. It's like, all right, I approved or rejected this whole document. Well, that's not very useful. If I, you know, there was one sentence here that needed to be looked at, but I flagged the whole document for human review, that's a big waste. Right. So, yeah. Segment level is what's proven to work.
Yeah. Which I see the benefit of it. I mean, from the point of, you know, changing a word inside of a sentence is pretty difficult if you don't put the entire sentence in context of what you're trying to say.
Right.
The word could apply, could not apply. I can't tell you.
You got to tell
me what does it mean and where does it fit.
You can make the argument that you need some context across segments, across sentences, right? But it's much, much less. It is, if we're honest, right? There are examples, but like 90% of sentences you can look at without seeing anything else and say it's basically right or basically wrong.
So let me ask you this now. Your customers, what are they seeing in terms of improvement or in terms of efficiency gains? X, 5X, where, how do you measure that? Like what's your claim?
It is very much that 80-20 to 20-80 range, right? So for some folks, it may only be 20% of stuff gets automated, but that may be a great outcome for them financially. And in other cases, it's 80%. So yeah, 5X.
And if somebody's interested to say, hey, I want to check out Model Front, I want to see if I can work with them, is there any prerequisite?
There are a ton of prerequisites. You can read about the basic ones at modelfront.com/quality prediction. I think, first one would basically be that, do you actually do high volume, high quality machine translation post-editing, right? Second one, do you have like a real need for efficiency here, right? If you're just trying to check the AI box, there's a ton of booths at every translation conference of people who will sell you BS so you can check the AI box for another quarter. So those are some of the prerequisites that are.
And I have to ask you this whole buzzwords thing. I know it's not your favorite, but I got to ask you. I'd love to see your reaction on this one. There's a lot of buzz around large language models. You know, I don't need to name them here. And so what do you think of that, the large language model? How do they compare to traditional neural machine translation engines? And what are you seeing in terms of perhaps from a conversion perspective? Are they fundamentally different tools or are they pretty much the same?
I would say, I guess fundamentally, the fundament is the same, but I think in practical terms, it's quite different, right? Because now you know, something like RAG, something like, okay, go check the internet and research this thing, right? This is, you know, we use these agents all the time, sort of internally for operating models.
I was going to ask you that. You use it internally
And you know, that's fundamentally different, right? So we are aggressively using this ourselves, right? When we started Modelfront, it was sort of like translators, some of translators' jobs are getting automated. Now it's like software engineers' jobs are getting automated, including even like machine learning, training machine learning, right? So it's very much, and then we've totally embraced that. Yeah. So it is qualitatively different at the scale and accuracy that's been reached right now.
So let's take a look at, you know, down the road, what is the future? What do you think your prediction would be for 2020, end of 2026? I can't look further than that, I guess 2026, maybe 2027, if you want to throw that.
Fortunately, I don't think things will change fast enough in the translation industry, if I'm really honest, right? So I do think we're going to see a lot of shakeouts. Like, there's just a lot of stuff that was kind of fake or was, you know, noise or whatever, that it wasn't sustainable and is going to kind of like fall apart. It was probably already, writing was on the wall end of 2025, and in 2026, it's not going to be able to be hidden anymore. So I do think we're going to kind of see some of that, right? Some of these 5-year contracts come due and things have to renew, right? That kind of stuff. I think, you know, what I don't like to predict the future too much, but I can see what's already happening. Firstly, a lot of teams sort of laying off people, then hiring other people, or sometimes the same people. Yeah. It's very funny.
Firing them quickly, I guess, before they even know that they, you know, do they need to hire them back, or is it true to fire them? Like, nobody's validating that. They're saying, okay, well, it's on the spreadsheet, I have to fire.
Right. So that kind of chaos. Then, you know, so, but I think overall it's, there's still a need for people. It just may be different people or on different terms or whatever. Right. So I'm not worried about that. I think things will grow. I think there's no shortage of content to be translated. There's no shortage, you know, I think people gotta get out of Silicon Valley sometimes. Like, the growth of the internet is still ongoing, and the people who are coming online now who don't understand English, right. Just to be blunt, they were very poor, and they're getting richer much faster and having more kids much faster than the people who were already online and spoke English, right? So from that sense, like, the demand, the need is greater than ever, and it's going to increase, right? So, but I think that really, you know, 2026 is really the year where you better start machine translation, post-editing, getting free of your vendors, et cetera, et cetera. But I would have said that in 2025 and 2024 too, right? So and I'm just surprised how long people can muddle along doing things, you know, business as usual.
Just a procurement bureaucracy, or do you think people, like, they know what they want, but they can't get it right now because they're stuck in a contract?
It's a mix. I think every scenario is different, right? Some people inherited a bad scenario that they couldn't get out of, and they know that it's wrong. Some people, it's literally their comfort zone. They are maybe closer to the vendor than they are to, you know, their own company. And they'd, like, literally rather get fired than have to learn something new. And sometimes you literally see that, right? So you got the full spectrum of things. And maybe every industry is like this, you know, I just know the translation industry.
And you know what, you know, there are a lot of people out there, for instance, that they are holding on to what they know. And you're right, you build a comfort zone and nothing has to change. And they don't need to change, right? And generally, change is forced upon us as an industry from outside the industry, not from within the industry, either by market requirements or customer requirements, or the customers asking for various things. But the industry generally is like, we draw a box, we want to make sure that everybody fits within that box. And if they don't fit within the box, it's going to be, we change, no big deal. But it's going to be like, you know, you started the conversation by talking about emotional attachment to the workflow that we currently have, emotional attachment to the process that we currently have, or the technology that we use. But meanwhile, we live in a world where that is not affordable anymore. Nobody can afford legacy systems and analog ways of doing things. And moving to the new realm of doing things and processing things, either this or I'm seeing a lot of companies being sold. I'm seeing a lot of companies being acquired by other companies because people are, you know, put a question mark. Should I continue down the road? You know, most of these companies, 19,000 companies in the industry, right? You got to remember that. Most of these companies are started by a translator, not necessarily a business entrepreneur that thought, I see a business opportunity, I'm going to go build something. But most of these companies are started by freelancers and they grew from there. And now they're faced with the reality of things. Things are changing rapidly.
Right. I think that's actually a very interesting point, right? Is that the barrier to providing translation, especially if it's, we're not talking certified or some niche technical domain or whatever, the barrier is very, very low, right? And so it's extremely competitive as sort of a provider. And I would even go far as to say that most of the pain or like the existential angst of the language service providers of the agencies is precisely due to that and has nothing to do with AI, right? So, it used to be that just there weren't that many people online or sort of like accessible that, let's say, an American company could connect with who spoke Russian, let's say. And now you just have, tens of millions of them online and they compete with the ones who, were already in America or whatever, right? And they're all around the world, tens of millions of people in Africa who speak great French, right? So that is really what drives a lot of the sort of existential angst and race to the bottom is competing with other humans. Because the demand has been growing, the number of words bought has just grown and grown every year, right? And it's easy to sort of blame it on AI, but in essence, it's they say you are other people's traffic, right? It's like you are other people's
True.
competitor translation agency that's undercutting them on price.
That's right. Now, before we wrap up, if you don't mind, Adam, where can people learn more about ModelFront, about machine translation in general? And I know you have the Machine Translate Foundation resources as well. So where can we find out a bit more information about these two?
ModelFront, it's on modelfront.com. And yeah, about machine translation in general, machinetranslate.org is a great way to find out sort of evergreen questions, which translation APIs exist, which ones, support Swahili, those kind of questions, key concepts explained simply. If you have more involved questions, like, which one is the best for my scenario, right? There's an open forum, it's reddit.com/r/machine translation. Or if you just write the machine translation subreddit in Google, you'll find that. And there it's a great place to ask questions and then you'll get a range of answers from smart folks to your specialized question.
Any final thoughts or advice to our listeners?
Yeah, definitely independence and control, right? So those kind of things are not going away. If you want innovation, you have to be in control. No one else is gonna, make things more efficient for you if they're in control.
And I want to thank you, Adam, for joining me today. Appreciate it.
Likewise, Robin. Always good to talk to you.
Always good to talk to you as well. And for the listeners, thank you so much for listening in. If you're coming on YouTube, thanks for watching us. If you're coming on our podcast channels, thanks for listening in. And great news. Since November till now, we just passed 100,000 downloads. I really appreciate all your support. Thank you so much for being part of this channel. And I really appreciate it. And I'll see you guys at the next episode. Adam, thanks so much again. And I wish you all the best in your endeavors.